Question about something, and if we don't know the answers, we go out and we find out more about it. One of the questions put to me yesterday was, Kina, why don't we have desalination plants? And surely with renewable energy and all the rest of it, we don't have to take electricity off the grid in totality. Surely some of the power that goes to running a desalination plant can be used or can utilize green power, as it were. And over and above that, we've just had another, some more electricity being added to the grid. So why can't we look at desalination? Long term, it's going to make sense. Well, I didn't know the answer to that because I don't understand the economics and all the other technical aspects of putting a desalination plant together, which is why I've invited Professor Neil Armitage, who's the head of the Department of Urban Water Management at UCT, to join us at the moment. We know that we have a crisis. It's a crisis when your dam sits on 43-44%, when you only have 100 days left. And the assumption is we're not going to get a hell of a lot of rain between now and the next 3 months. We have a problem, Houston. We have a big one. So, Professor Neil Armitage, thank you for joining us on the show this morning.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. And you're quite correct. We do have a crisis. By the way, it's head of Departments of Engineering, but that's a small thing.
No, sorry. I normally apologies. I will ask the team to correct that for future. No, I like getting things right.
Just getting back to the original proposition, which is why can't we use green energy to drive desalination plants? Well, of course, that's correct. And there are many examples around the world of where governments have done exactly that. And I can think of a couple straight off. It's done in Perth. It's done in Sydney. But that's only a small part of the problem. Mm. And the bigger part of the problem is that even green energy costs. Now, the cost of green energy is coming down all the time, so it's becoming competitive against the sort of old-fashioned greenhouse-generating coal energy. Let's not even talk about nuclear. Mm. But the fact of the matter is it still costs a lot. And the other question, of course, is that if you have an energy deficit, whether you use green energy to drive desalination works or power people's light bulbs or run industries is a bit of a moot point.
Yeah.
But that is an aside. I think the bigger issue is about whether desalination, large-scale desalination, is a solution for South Africa. I think that's the bigger question. Mm. Now, certainly desalination is a quite a long-established industry and is certainly appropriate in many situations. But it's quite interesting to note that other places in a similar situation to us, like Australia, have really battled. They built desalination works at most of the major cities. I'm aware of the Gold Coast outside Brisbane, Sydney,
yeah.
Melbourne, and Perth. And with exception of Perth, they're having problems with all of them. And it comes down to the simple one of cost. Because, of course, the capital works for a major desalination works that's going to have to produce 1 million cubic meters of water per day if it was producing the whole all water for Cape Town. Of course, it wouldn't need to do all of it, but at least a substantial part of it, is a major undertaking. The ones in Australia for cities of comparable size to Cape Town were costing in the order of $2-3 billion Australian dollars, which, of course, you need to multiply by whatever the current exchange rate is. So it becomes extremely expensive. And that's just the capital cost. You then got the operation cost, which is partly electricity, and you're going to use a lot of electricity, and it's partly also the membranes themselves, because the most common technology that's used for desalination works are what's called reverse osmosis, which is basically you forcing water backwards through a very thin membrane, which leaves the salt on the one side and pure water or near pure water goes through. That's certainly a technology which has advanced in recent years, and certainly the costs and efficiencies of them are improving continuously, but it still costs a lot. And the thing about those membranes is that they do have to be replaced from time to time, and they really don't like standing doing nothing. So what happened in Australia, which is quite, I think, constructive for South Africa, is that they commissioned these desalination works during their millennial drought when they had a situation very much like we have now, except stay on for longer. And as the irony of it all was that as they were about to switch on, or as they were switching on all these massive multi-billion rand desalination works, they had floods of massive proportions, which filled up all the dams. And now you've got a choice. You know, you can choose to use water at X rands per kiloliter, or you can choose to use desalinated water at 3X. Well, you can imagine what everybody wanted. So quite a few of these works, I was just kind of doing a quick check, I don't know how many, but have been effectively mothballed. And that, of course, is an expense. And if you want to get those up and running again, you've got to sort of overhaul them all, replace all the membranes. So it hasn't actually been terribly successful. Perth is the one exception to that.
Yeah.
What they do is they run it as a bit of a base load generator using renewable energy, I think largely, if not exclusively,
yeah.
which is a smart way to go. And they just simply accept they're going to have a certain amount of expensive water, but it gives them surety and helps them you know, against long-term losses. And they don't have too much in the way of alternatives.
Well, exactly. So
I think that's what it comes down to, is that if you don't have too, if you're in the desert or if you're in a very dry area, then you don't have too many alternatives. You accept the higher cost of water and you go with it. If you do have other alternatives, and you know, you could argue that many places in South Africa that we do, and maybe a bigger issue is one of the water efficiency. I mean, we simply use too much water on a per capita basis.
We also lose too much water, don't we, in the system?
Yes, we do. I think nationally, we lose about 30% of our water in the system itself. So, I mean, if you really want to do yourself a favor, go and fix the leaks. Now, you'll struggle to fix all of them, but certainly it's a lot more cost-effective in the long run and environmentally friendly in the long run to fix the leaks rather than try and do more big capital works.
Now,
it's not to say desalination isn't appropriate some places.
Sure, but let's say we're sitting, which is the fact at the moment, 100 days worth of water. We have no rain in the foreseeable future. We have another dry winter.
Yeah.
Even if we fix all the little leaks here or there, burst pipes, and let's say we get back 20%, which would be, I mean, I doubt we'll ever be able to achieve that. Then what?
No, look, I mean, if we have an ongoing multi-year drought, like effectively, well, at the moment we've had 2 years, basically, of sub-average rainfall, we keep on having that. Yes, we have severe problems, but Cape Town's water losses are much lower than most other cities. The city's been working quite hard on things like pressure management and also the reuse of treated sewage effluent. And that straight away is another option that is been quietly promoted by the city in appropriate places as a substitute for potable water. The fact of the matter is that most of the water that we use, we don't actually need potable, high-quality water. You know, if you're irrigating golf courses, you don't need potable water. You know, you could actually use treated sewage effluent. It sounds bad, but of course, if it's treated, you can in fact treat it all the way to potable water standards if you absolutely have to, usually by using a reverse osmosis at the end. But be that as it may, you don't need it fully treated if you're going to water golf courses, or you're going to flush toilets, or you're going to wash factory floors. And so the city itself already has a process of doing that, which they're gradually promoting. Of course, what it means is constructing what they call a dual reticulation system. It means additional pipes, because you can't mix treated sewage effluent and potable water in the same pipe. You have to keep them separate. And there has to be strict protocols that make sure that, you know, people don't open the wrong tap, for example.
Okay.
But there's a source of water. I mean, we really have to get into recycling a lot more. We've got a bit of a mentality here of use once and discard. And that also goes to stormwater as well. I mean, stormwater, more rain falls on Cape Town in the average winter than we use through as potable water through the entire year. Our problem is that we pollute it and we throw it away, basically.
Professor, I just want to quickly, we're running out of time at the moment, so I just want to quickly just take Mike's call. I'm going to ask the team just to put Mike on with you so that they can hear you. Mike's got a point that he wants to make around what's happening in Spain. Mike, a quick point from you, sir.
Hi, good morning, guys. Prof, I just want to just touch on this. In Spain, they've got that solar mirror array that is pointed to a tower where we've got lots of seawater around here, and through thermosiphoning, so two things can happen. One, you can run a turbine, and the steam, when it condenses, can go via trickle down through rocks to get the minerals back. Are you doing any research on that?
Well, the short answer is no, because my main area is water itself, and particularly storm water, and to less extent sewage. But there are different ways of doing desalination, and also different ways of generating power. Mm. And it is possible to combine these things in imaginative different ways.
Mm.
But it does, at the end of the day, come down to a cost. And we're talking financial costs mainly here, but there's also potentially environment costs, maybe not in your Spanish example. But
yeah.
The fact of the matter is that, you know, you have to decide, if you get greenhouse gases, you can avoid by renewable energies, but you've still got a brine problem. I know also some companies that are trying to basically resell the brine in some form or the other. The whole thing is an expensive process.
Mm.
The costs are coming down, and of course, as the costs come down, it becomes steadily more viable to do these things. But generally, it's cheaper to do alternative things first. And certainly, that's basically the way we've gone. Essentially, the city has been looking at the lowest cost options and slowly working their way up the cost chain.
Mm.
But there are many things that could be done. The question originally was about desalination. Desalination as a whole is still very expensive.
Yes.
The cost is coming down, but at this stage, I don't think it's viable for Cape Town on a large scale, but I know Cape Town are investigating it.
Professor Neil Armitage, thank you very much. A wealth of knowledge there. Professor Armitage is head of the Department of Civil Engineering at UCT.